Well, good morning and Happy New Year.
Recently,
we have been talking about some of the traditions in Buddhism, and I thought that we would connect a bit the tradition of Buddhism and the tradition of Unitarian Universalism in a bit more of a formal way. And one thing we've noticed, I guess the last several times I spoke about Buddhism, was that there is an emphasis in Buddhism on letting go of the past and letting go of the future. And we know from a psychological perspective, if we get caught in the past, there's a tendency to live out of depression, a low-grade chronic depression, or maybe a more severe depression if the past is really heavy upon us and heavy in our minds. And we also know that if we get caught into the future, if we think about the future too much and we're concerned about the future too much, and if we plan about the future too much, our life will be full of anxiety. And when our life is either dominated by depression or not dominated by anxiety, we are not living in the here and now. And if we're not living in the here and now, we are not spiritually free. So from the core of the Buddhist tradition, spiritual freedom is a goal, and it is out of that spiritual freedom that we move toward living out of compassion. The reading that we read today from William Ellery Channing, one of the founders of Unitarianism in our country, is very important. It says something very similar. He says, "I call that mind free which protects itself against society, against conformity in society." And then he says, "I call that mind free which resists the bondage of habit, which does not mechanically copy the past nor live on its old virtues." What is it about us human beings that we resist living in the here and now, that we resist living in the pure present, that we have the tendency to linger in our past, or we have the tendency to jump into the future? Now, I can tell when I'm in the future or I'm in the past in a way that's not so healthy for me, because when somebody's speaking to me or when I hear the news, I get extremely emotionally reactive, or I shut down inside. If you can look back in your own life this past week, this past month, places where you may have been emotionally reactive. And emotional reactivity is when, say, that I'm centered and I'm feeling good, and all of a sudden some news comes toward me or somebody's reaction comes toward me, and I feel myself getting emotionally excited in a way that's not very pleasant for myself or for the other person. That's a clue that I'm not in the here and now. The reason I think we resist living out of the here and now is because it is a very responsible place to live from. When we are in the here and now, we are not easily deluded. We are not easily deceived by ourselves or by others. When we live in the here and now, we have to make fresh choices all the time. Choices out of the awareness of the here and now. For example, if I'm living out of the here and now and I'm on the water, and say I'm moving down the water on my boat and I notice that the water is polluted, if I'm living in the here and now, I'm going to have a feeling about the water not being healthy. But if I can just drive through the water or see the water in a polluted condition and not have any feelings about it, I'm not living out of the here and now. The same way in a relationship. If my relationship is in trouble and I'm living and there's something not stirring inside of me saying I need to do something about the relationship I'm in, I need to take some action, but I'm living as if there's nothing going on, I'm not living in the here and now. If I'm in a faith tradition that calls us to a sense of responsibility, and yet there are things that are going on in my community and things that are going on in the nation that are really calling us to action, and I'm not moving toward action, I'm not living in the here and now. The question I have to ask us today, out of a position of being in the here and now, not being dominated by our past, not being dominated by our future, not dwelling in a state of anxiety and not living in a state of depression, is, do we really want to belong to this faith tradition? Do we want to claim Unitarian Universalism as our home, as our faith? And the reason I ask that question, Unitarian Universalism was born out of an awareness of the here and now and out of awareness of oppression. Many of us may remember the story, and if not, I'll just tell a bit about it. The birth of Unitarianism and the birth of Universalism, Tony, speaking of Italians, very, very much influenced by the Italian humanists in the 16th century, was that in the 16th century, what happened was that the religious domination was so strong, and especially when it was combined with the government, the ruling governors of the community, that there was an oppression that would lead to death if you did not believe as in those religious traditions. And so often they went from Protestantism to Catholicism, from, say, Calvinism to Lutheranism, and depending where you fell on that, and depending when it changed, you could die. In the middle of all of that, the Unitarian voice began to stir and began to move and began to stretch out its boundaries. And the beginning of Unitarianism said that in this community, we can believe what we want. We will tolerate different beliefs. And for a moment in time, there was a strength within the government to hold those boundaries so that Unitarianism rose up out of oppression and declared separation of church and state, and declare tolerance for other beliefs. And we know soon thereafter that space collapsed. And again, the freedom, the separation of church and state disappeared. And when it disappeared, persecution began to be heavy. So when we choose to be in the faith tradition of Unitarian Universalism, we choose to stand with a voice that cries for the separation of church and state. We choose to stand in a community that cries out for tolerance of different belief systems, not to be dominated by one or another belief, but to be open to hear other beliefs and not be angry or not be manipulated to persecution if somebody believes different than us. We think of the Unitarian Universalists coming to existence and rising to a prominent place in our country in the 18th century. The voice of Unitarian Universalism in the 18th century, we read from William Ellery Channing, and we've shared before that in his address to the Massachusetts legislature, he was expressing gratefulness because the government in Massachusetts created boundaries where that the mind could be free, where that the government did not impinge upon the mind to make it believe a certain way, that the government did not impinge upon the mind that if it believed in a particular way, it would be persecuted. William Ellery Channing was thanking the Massachusetts legislation that they created an environment where there could be openness of thought and openness of belief. Not quite what we have today. But the Unitarian movement was a movement to create a space where our mind could be invigorated and engage in dialogue without fear of persecution, without fear of being discriminated against. The women of the early Unitarian Universalist movement, Louise Brown Blackwell, who was a Universalist, she wrote literature and she was wrote very strongly against slavery and took a lot of abuse against taking that stand against slavery. Olympia Brown, one of the first women ordained in America, was also very strong against slavery and very powerful woman for the suffrage movement for the rights of women. These women that were born in 1750 and 1802, these women took stances against the oppression of the day. They did not get lost in the defending beliefs of yesterday. They did not get lost into manipulating people to believe in something about tomorrow. They were about the issues in the present. They were about the issues of today. They spoke strongly against slavery. They spoke strongly for the rights of women. They spoke strongly for the equality among the sexes. They moved in the direction of preaching from the pulpits, even though they received resistance from their own denominations about speaking from the pulpit. Many of the women in the Unitarian Universalist circles were driven out of the pulpit and moved into the suffrage movement because their calling to speak of equality, their calling to speak of freedom, would not be silenced by the men of their community. Because they could not express their movement toward spiritual freedom in this direction, in the church's direction, that did not silence their voices. They found a place where they could express their voice. This is our heritage, to read and understand the oppression of today and to address it, not to be silent. So we must make a decision. Do we want to be part of this heritage? Do we want to be part of this faith tradition? Do we want to claim this history as our own history? If we are attentive to this history and claiming it as our own history, we also will not be silent when we see and feel oppression in our land. We will not watch the television. We will not watch the football game when we have an opportunity to speak, to join in a community, to protest if we sense there is oppression out there. We will not be silent when we are listening to politicians when they speak this way or when they speak that way, and we hear it and we know what they're saying is wrong, when we know what they're saying is leading us in a direction that is moving toward oppression, that moves toward persecution of a particular religious belief. We will not be silent if we choose a spiritually free choice of making Unitarian Universalism our home faith. There is no copycatting of the past. There is no defending of past beliefs in Unitarian Universalism. One thing that is quite unique about Unitarian Universalism is that as knowledge is added to the community of faith, Unitarian Universalism changes. As the Italian humanists began to question what was taught in the Bible, because now we had the Gutenberg Press, because now the Bible was being written in languages that many people could understand, and people began to read it, and people began to say, this book that was interpreted by the church that dominated Europe, when the average people began to read that book, they began to say, it doesn't say what you're teaching us. It says something different than what you're teaching us. And as new knowledge was brought in, they changed. And as they changed, they spoke and addressed the changes that they were making. And the changes and the new knowledge that they were bringing in, which causes these changes, pointed to deception. Pointed to where people were being dominated and people were being oppressed. And they addressed it. They spoke against it. Somehow, these people were called to speak against oppression, much like what we have been talking about in the story of the wounded swan, where Savasti and Sajanta, the two children that were being taught by Buddha, much like those two children who were letting go of their oppressive cultures, the culture that they internalized, that they realized that was oppressive because of the teaching of Buddha. They let go of it. They did not defend it. And that's crucial for us to understand, that we're holding on to beliefs. We're holding on to an understanding of our culture that's guiding us in our culture. And it would be very easy that when someone speaks against the beliefs I'm holding about my culture, it would be very easy to defend what I already believe, rather than to take in new knowledge, rather than to believe the deception, or rather than believe the absence of news. Today, there's a struggle in Russia and the Ukraine. In that struggle, Russia said to the Ukrainian country, which they share a 600-mile border that's really not defensible by either country, that Russia has natural gas. The pipelines of Russia goes through Ukraine and into Europe. In Ukraine, they get the gas at a reduced rate because they allowed it to be piped through their country. Russia quadrupled the price of gas that moves for the Ukrainians, that moves from Russia. And the Ukrainians said, we cannot afford this. If you do that, we will shut down the pipeline. Okay. That's what's happening today. When I read in the newspaper, I read something about babies being born. I read something about sports teams. I read something about everything but this. How can I have a voice to understand that? How can I have a voice to understand how our country should react to that? How can I have an understanding of what it means to be a citizen of a global community when there are crises right on the edge of happening, and I don't hear about those crises right on the edge of happening, but I hear about this other news that in a very large way has no real meaning to my everyday life. It's a deception. Unitarian Universalists are called to point out the deception. Unitarian Universalists are called to address the issues that are not being addressed. That means we have to dig deeper than what the surface teaching in a society is. We have to dig deeper than what's being delivered to us as news, when it has no real meaning to who we are. To choose to be a Unitarian Universalist is a difficult choice. To choose to be a Unitarian Universalist means letting go of our past and letting go of our future and experiencing the here and now as cleanly as we possibly can, and understanding this world from a position of care so that we can be sensitive to the oppression that's going on in this world, and having the courage that when we understand the oppression that's going on in this world, to address it, to speak to it. It is a very responsible place to be, to let go of the past and let go of the future and to be in the here and now. Every day we need to do that. Every day we need to assess where we are personally in relationships and personally with where I am as an individual and as a person of community and as a person in a nation. If I do not have some kind of discipline and some kind of spiritual practice to get me to that place, I will live without experiencing the here and now. One thing in the story that I pointed out and I think is extremely important in that story of the wounded swan about the two children that became the students of Buddha was that they allowed Buddha to teach them. And what I mean by that is somehow they sat before this teacher and they let everything go. And when this teacher taught them that they could eat together, when this teacher taught them, one from a very persecuted position and one from a royal position, when this teacher taught them they could drink from the same cup, when this teacher taught them that they could drink from the same fountain, when this teacher taught them that they could walk on the same side of the street, they did it. They drank from the same fountain. They walked on the same side of the street. They drank from the same cup. They ate from the same dish. They knew that they were the same. They knew that they were not in a relationship with one another where one was superior to the other. The question is, if we are going to be Unitarian Universalists, do we have a way of presenting ourselves to our tradition? Do we have a way of presenting ourselves to the literature of our tradition? Do we have a way of presenting ourselves to the teachers of our tradition? So that when we read, so that when we hear, it moves into us and it changes us. Do I present myself to my faith and the sources of my faith with the full expectation that I will be different, that I will change? Do I join my faith tradition with the desire for transformation? Do I join my faith tradition with a desire and a drive for spiritual growth and spiritual change and spiritual transformation? If we are Unitarian Universalists being true to our tradition, when we present ourselves to our tradition, there is a desire to change. There is an expectation for spiritual maturity. There is an expectation to have a greater awareness of this culture that we live in. If I'm coming to my faith tradition and I do not have the expectation of being different as a result of the engagement with my faith tradition, I am not being true to Unitarian Universalism. I am not being true to the faith traditions that we claim to be ours. We claim that our faith tradition is a living tradition. We claim that our faith tradition is living so that when we engage it, it comes into us, and as a result of it coming into us, I am different, and then when I re-engage the world, I re-engage the world with a greater wisdom, with a greater discernment, with a greater awareness of what's happening within my life and the dynamics of my culture. The question for us this year is, how are we going to present ourselves to our faith tradition? We are asked and required as Unitarian Universalists that as we present ourselves to our faith tradition, to have the expectation that we will be different, that we will be in a process of transformation. That is what it means to be part of a living faith, to have the expectation of being different tomorrow than I am today. Thank you.